Kings of Macedonia, Alexander the Great, the Siege of Gaza, Part 2, and Alexander heads to Egypt. Now, soon after Hephaestion arrived with the heavy siege equipment, the siege was pressed on all the harder for the next weeks. Rams battered the walls of Gaza and created breaches. Mines dug underneath were completed and filled with combustible materials that was then ignited, burning through the timber props. As these collapsed, the roof came down, and so did sections of the wall above it. Battus and his men did not give in and managed to repulse three assaults. More breaches were made and the existing ones widened until a fourth assault through the breaches and a direct escalation and a direct attack over the walls overwhelmed the defense. There was competition to be the first man over the wall, and it was won by one of the king's companions. Curtius claims that Alexander was fit enough to take part and was hurt again with a stone flung by the hand or an engine struck his leg, although this was probably no more than just a cut or a bruise. Battus and Gaza had challenged Alexander, and as at Tyre, he was savage in his punishment. The men were massacred, the city sacked, the women and children sold into slavery. Once again, the city was to be repopulated by people brought in from a wider neighborhood. Arrian does not mention Battus's fate, but Curtius claims he fought on heroically until exhaustion and wounds caused him to collapse. Brought to Alexander, he defied him, keeping silent and disdaining the abuse that was hurled at him. Since he would not submit or beg for mercy, the king exploded in the rage and ordered the enemy commander bound by his feet and dragged behind a speeding chariot until he died. This was a conscious echo of the Iliad, for Achilles had treated Hector's corpse in this way, but it was far more savage to do this to a live enemy. If this was how Battus died, then it's a particularly vicious act, and even Curtius notes that usually Alexander had more respect for courage in an enemy. Perhaps his wound, which could easily have ended his life, may well have still been causing pain, along with the sheer impatience at an enemy holding out for another difficult siege so soon after Tyre. It simply provoked an outburst, or the story may have been invented. What we can say is that Battus served his king with great courage and loyalty at the cost of his life. An army taking the desert route to Egypt needed to take care organizing its supply and especially provisions of water, and could encounter great difficulties if faced by a determined enemy. Alexander was not opposed. His supply organization was well tested by this stage of the war. When he reached the fortress of Pelusium, the traditional gateway to Egypt, he was met by enthusiastic crowds. This is unlikely to have been a surprise. Darius's government handed the country over to the invader is marked in contrast to the stubborn resistance of Battus. I'll bet the lack of enthusiasm for Persian rule amongst the Egyptians made successful resistance unlikely. Alexander made himself pharaoh, king of the upper and lower kingdoms, son of the god Ra and the beloved god Amun, and was depicted in the traditional way on monuments. In marked and deliberate contrast to the Persians, he showed great respect for the Egyptians, their religion, and customs, which in turn involved generous treatment of the highly influential priest caste. His mood may well have been helped by good news arriving from the Aegean. The Persian fleet had withered away as contingents deserted and communities rebelled against Persian control, and its commanders had been captured, although Pharnabazus subsequently escaped. Respect for local opinion only went so far, and there is no good evidence that Alexander was formally crowned as ruler or took part in any distinctly Egyptian rituals or sacrifices. When he celebrated a festival, it was usually thoroughly Greek, and when he decided to found a great city on the coast, what would become the most famous of his Alexandras, it was from the start to be overwhelmingly Greek in its culture. Even shrines to native deities such as Osiris were Hellenized. Arrian once again speaks of a longing to found the city, with Alexander also claiming inspiration from Homer in his choice of the site, as so often divine approval was supposedly shown through an omen. For the want of anything better, his staff used grain to mark the outline of the main streets and other key features, and when the birds flew down and ate this, it was interpreted as a sign of future prosperity for the city, which would feed many people in the wider world. Late in 332 or early in 331 BCE, another longing seized Alexander. He led a small column out into the desert of the west of Egypt to visit the shrine and oracle of Siwa at the oasis of a god called Amun, who was associated with Zeus by the Greeks. The choice of this, rather than any of the oracles in Egypt itself, shows that he was not primarily interested in local opinion. Amun was far better known in Greece and further afield and less alien to the Greeks. Hercules and Perseus were both said to have visited, although in the case of Perseus, the context of Alexander's visit is the only time this is mentioned, and also the only time he was claimed as Alexander's ancestor. We cannot say how famous these stories really were, or whether, as with the Gordian knot, the importance of the place really started when Alexander showed an interest. First going to Peritoneum, modern Marsa Mothra, where he received deputations and submission from Cyrene to the west, Alexander followed the desert trails for some 170 miles to Siwa. The oasis was isolated. In the Second World War, it became the base of long-range desert group in its lonely campaign against the Germans and the Italians, but not so remote that the path was not reasonably well-trodden. Yet, apart from the march to Egypt, the Macedonians had no experience of deserts and found going hard. Rainstorms buffeted the travelers, and sandstorms confused them so they lost their way, only to be saved by a pair of crows. It was natural enough for creatures to head for water of an oasis, but it was readily interpreted as an omen. Ptolemy even claimed that the guides were actually two snakes that were able to cry in what sounded like words. The reverence for snakes as royal symbols in Egypt may well have influenced this passage written down years later when he ruled the country. So next time we'll finally get Alexander and his party there at Siwa. There is a discussion that he had gone to another temple prior to heading out to Siwa and asked the priest if he was the son of Zeus, and they supposedly told him no, and therefore he had them killed. So one is assuming he's going to get a little better reception at this other temple. Now the sources for this, the Politics by Aristotle, the Histories by Herodotus, Histories, 12 volumes, by Diodorus Siculus, Peloponnesian War by Thucydides, and the Lives by Plutarch, Philip and Alexander, Kings and Conquerors, by Goldsworthy, History of Macedonia, Volume 1 and Volume 2, by Hammond, In the Shadow of Olympus, The Emergence of Macedonia, by Borgia. Some additional sources for the sections on Alexander rules would include, of course, Arians, The Campaigns of Alexander, In the Footsteps of Alexander the Great, by Michael Wood, The Wars of Alexander the Great, by Haeckel, and The Story of Alexander's Empire, by Mahaffey. So I hope you enjoyed that, and as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out our merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.